This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. Hey, welcome back to Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, where we delve into the world of Queen Charlotte and explore its intriguing characters. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and on this episode, we've got some special interviews lined up for you. Joining us is none other than the esteemed executive producer of Queen Charlotte, Betsy Beers. She has delivered episodes upon episodes of people finding their persons, and she's helped to transform Thursday nights in our recent history, y'all. And she does everything but drive a bus. Later on, we're getting up close and personal with our dear friend, choreographer Jack Murphy. Episode 3 of Queen Charlotte is when we get to the Danbury Ball, and y'all know how I feel about the Danburys. So, okay, we're going to do that. We're getting into the Danbury Ball. During our check-in with Betsy, we're going to explore the complex relationships of Queen Charlotte, Lady Danbury, and Dowager Viscountess Bridgerton, and how these three-dimensional characters defy the gravity of ageism. We're going to dive into the way Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story, contributes to a broader cultural shift in embracing the expansive, triumphant, messy stories of women who have lived. So let's get into the first part of our conversation with Betsy, who has been instrumental in how Queen Charlotte came to fruition. Betsy Beers, thank you for joining us today. We are really, really excited to talk about Queen Charlotte with you.
Great. I'm always excited to talk about Queen Charlotte. I mean, who wouldn't be, right?
Who wouldn't be?
And it feels like a lot of people are.
Yeah. I mean, do you look at what people say after you put out a baby into the world?
I am not somebody who absorbs a lot of that stuff. I will read sometimes, you know, reviews because I'm curious, but I don't really take that much to heart. And I'm not because I'm not a social media person. We always start from the place, like, I'm just incredibly proud of it. I'm proud of everything that Shonda did with this and every single person who worked on it. So it always goes back to the same sentence, which is, if I love it, I really hope other people love it. But nobody can take away from me that I love it.
You know the saying, you know, your rapper's favorite rapper. I feel like you are a producer. You are a producer's producer. Like, so to hear you say that is very
that's pretty awesome. I don't know what to call it, but to know that you can put something out and it's out there, you know, it's out there. It is what it is. And Queen Charlotte is a big wow, though. Where does your story start with working on Queen Charlotte?
Okay, so my story is very similar to Shonda's story because Shonda repeated her story to me as soon as it happened. So I would say that our stories were in tandem because Shonda had the conversation with Ted regarding his sadly late mother-in-law, who had suggested to him that, you know, you should just do a story about Queen Charlotte because she's so interesting and what an incredible idea. And I just thought it was terrific. And very early on, because like, who doesn't love Queen Charlotte? And a lot of this has to do with, you just do. I mean, the lady's a baller. She's a total, she owns what she owns. She says what she means. She's funny. She's irreverent. She's deep. And she's got the most awesome, amazing sense of style. Like, who the hell doesn't love Queen Charlotte? Right. So I think we started with that, and I think very early on, and she would remember, Shonda probably remember better than me because she's got a better memory than I do. Very early on, we talked about her doing the whole thing because that was something that she'd actually never done before, which is write something pretty much from start to finish herself. And which in a weird way, it was sort of this genuinely deep and intense immersion in this world for a chunk of time while the ideas started to form in her head. So stuff needs to percolate, you know, with any writer, I think. It's having, especially when you're taking on and creating a context which is an origin story for Bridgerton, but is also has certain things which are rooted in historical fact. It's a real tightrope. And the main thing was that it was coherent as an origin story for the world we know as Bridgerton.
Yeah.
From my perspective, as the lucky woman who gets to work with her, it was a delight for me because we actually hadn't had the chance to do something like that in a while because we both are multitasking. And I really love that fomenting process is the best way I can put it. And I always say, like, look, I'm just here for whatever you need, and I'm here for nothing if you don't want it, but I'm always here if you do want it, because I love producing. And to me, that is anything anybody needs at any point, with the exception of driving a really big truck, which I won't do because you don't want to see me do that. It's not a good idea. But anything that I can do to help articulate a vision and then carry it through, that's the joy of the job.
I'm so glad you went there, because immediately I'm like, what does that look and sound like? Being in the trenches, fermenting, like what does that look and sound like? I'm sure lots of people are wondering, you know, because we see you all after it's all done and, you know, put together and talking about it. And, you know, it is fascinating to hear how you work.
Yeah. And the funny thing always is there's always drama behind the drama. An easy shoot does not necessarily make the best show. Because sometimes when there are no obstacles and it's sunshine, lollipops and rainbows and everything's great, there's something about really digging into the complexity of a process, which I think emerges too on the screen in a way. And that is not saying to the audience out there that there have not been movies and television shows that were just amazingly great experiences, because they all are in different ways. It's just different kinds of obstacles make you reach in and find things you never would have found or come up with before. And sometimes the obstacle can be financial. Sometimes it can be logistical. From Grey's Anatomy before the launch of that show to now, the main thing is that we love something and we want to watch something, and we would knock on doors and hand people copies of whatever this product is because we want people to see it so badly, and that we'll never do the same thing twice.
That's hard.
Well, the funny thing is it is and it's not, because movie directors tend to have conversations and stories and ideas and themes they come back to again and again and again. It's not that those things ever change. It's not that the internal changes. It's the platform for storytelling or a tone or a world, or, and I think a lot of it's world. A lot of it is, I just want to get into a different world because I'm escaping from all this too. And I've been living in that world a lot. I want to go to this world.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what was cool about this for me was it's a whole different perspective on Bridgerton.
Something you just said makes me think about how we think about representation in what we watch and listen to.
One of the great things about having the opportunity to work with Shonda is she is somebody who never stops challenging herself. And I feel like I'm cut basically from the same cloth. There's this part of me that just wants to do the same thing again. You know, there's always, because it's like easy and it's a path taken. It's like lines that I've learned in a play. It's like, and I don't sleep well with that. Life is really short and there's all this stuff. What did I learn from this? And how can I apply it to this? And I think you're absolutely right in terms of representation, which is, it's not good enough just to sit there and say, well, goody two shoes, we got that. Wow, this situation has changed or this perception has changed. There's so much more. There's so much more to be done. There's another conversation. And every single time we go through another transition period of awareness and acknowledgement, it has to reflect where we've been, but also where do you want to go?
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. I see Cheryl Lee Ralph, you know, win an award and it's like, yes, I see, you know, the cast of Bridgerton and Queen Charlotte. I'm like, yeah. And then I think my cup is full and I see the opening credits to Queen Charlotte on Netflix. I have not seen them before, that graphic. And it was emotional for me. I was like, wait a minute, hold on, because I thought I was fulfilled and that, you know, where we are right now would kind of just kind of be where we are for a few decades, you know, like we, but those opening credits did something else to me and I don't know what it is, but wow. I don't know what it is.
Those are great opening credits, aren't they? We were so excited. Scott Collins, who is our post genius at Shondaland, we all reacted the same way, which this pitch sort of came in. It was like, there's this amazing, understated elegance, but yet you can kind of fill in the blanks as you watch it. And it's got this great, it's sort of telling you what's happening, but it's not telling you what's happening. Look, so much of what the show is about and also what you're describing, which is, well, you're not describing exactly, but I'm probably putting words in your mouth, but it's the whole concept of life is about palace intrigue, right? I mean, it's to a large degree, it's what we do with every day in different ways. And what's great about the opening credits and the show is like, how do you ever learn the rules and who do you want to be in that context?
Yeah.
Because so much of Queen Charlotte for me is about having the agency to change the rules. You know, nobody talks about Princess Augusta.
I love me some Princess Augusta.
Right? I mean, and
yes.
I think that there's something amazing about the relationship between Agatha and Augusta, but it's looking at the way a woman at this particular period of time who's also protecting her child, it's the closest thing to the crown she could get. Mm. And she is running things, but she's running things in this incredibly shadow-like way. And she's constantly pivoting and moving. And as opposed to those, you know, old dim dudes who are sitting behind her are sort of like dusty and egg-stained and don't really know what they're doing. Like, she's sharp and she's got her shit together and she...
Egg-stained?
And all she wants is a real freaking debate. You know, and Agatha comes in and it's like, there's a debate. I know this is getting very theoretical, and I apologize because I'm not talking about the great actors yet or anything, because everybody's really good and everyone knows it. Okay.
Well, you brought up the actors.
They're great.
Yeah.
I'm bouncing up and down in my seat right now. Nobody can see me do it, but I'm doing it because I'm a freaking nerd. So that's what I'm doing.
Do you really nerd out about casting?
Oh my
do
God.
Is that one of your favorite parts of the process?
Oh my God, I love casting. I started as a really bad actor. So I have a special place in my heart for actors. And also I believe in a kind and conducive atmosphere for actors to try to do their best work, which is something which we have been complimented on as a company, which means a lot to me. But I just love casting. I mean, And we could hardly wait to get our hands on this one. So Kelly Valentine Hendry, who did obviously Bridgerton and is a genius and wonderful, she found some of the most incredible young talents. Everybody was really good. We saw a lot of really good people, but each one of those three initial youngsters, and by the way, same with young Brimsley and Reynolds and, you know, Tom and Allison Akel, who runs creative for Shondaland, and Shonda and I like all agreed. They were magical.
Wow. All right. Go refresh your coffee. We've got more with Betsy Beers right after the break.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. If tonight's movie night is just what you need, make it special with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Welcome back to Queen Charlotte, the official podcast. We're talking with executive producer Betsy Beers. Let's get back into it. So in this episode, it's where we have the Danbury Ball. And I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit about two things. The Great Experiment and what the goal is. And I would love to talk about Danbury, Queen Charlotte, and Violet as women over 50.
First, I will speak to the unique situation of being an older woman in society. And it's certainly one of the things I do love about Bridgerton, but specifically, I love the way Shonda set the table to really allow us to dig into both with the backstory of Agatha and understanding Agatha as an older, independent, free woman. And the contrast with that and Violet, who hasn't explored the power or the majesty of her age because she lost a husband at a young age. I think there's a part of her that died when her husband died, she thinks, which is why the whole kind of idea of the garden blooming is so wonderful and how Shonda came up with that. I first read that and I laughed until stuff came out of my nose. I mean, it's the best. But it's the best because you're watching a character who has supported and loved and worried and connived for the better of her children, who's never, ever taken a moment to pay attention to herself. And it's the first time in the history of the series, I mean, all, whatever, we've had 12 episodes of Bridgerton and about to have it, you know, another 8, but it's not 12. I can't do my math, whatever the hell it is. 18, 16, 16, that's it. I knew 16. It. This is why I didn't go into mathematics. But we've had all of these episodes in which we've been digging into the issues of the heart and the ton and the world. And God bless Shonda, man, because Queen Charlotte is so much about how we process who we are and what we still can be as we get older. And what's so great about watching Violet discover and realize that there might be a world out there, I think is so encouraging and such a loving gift to so many women who thought you had to close the door, because it is still an issue that we are ignored and we are invisible. And so many women in so many walks of life right now are, no matter what the age, as we know. I think it speaks to also us understanding at the end of all the comedy and, you know, sorrows and prayers and the hysterical scenes with the kids, this amazing scene where you realize that she gave up her children for her husband. And both Brimsley and her children confront her with that fact. And that even at a point that Queen Charlotte has come to in this magnificence of her life, she realizes she would not do it any other way, probably. But she gets I think for me, the end of the series, when the amazing under the bed stuff is,
yeah,
she's in it to win it, baby. Like, and she didn't see that she wasn't there for her kids because it was all about the Kim and then all about the country. And those are the sacrifices you make, you know, and part of what power and responsibility is.
But that power and responsibility, that part. That for me is what I love about seeing these three characters, especially and Charles Keir as Lord Ledger and Cyril Nuit as Herman Danbury. Just all that texture and backstory. My favorite moment was the pear brandy moment. but there's this, I have a new favorite moment.
The pear brandy moment, we have to just take a moment, because the pear brandy moment is so baller. I mean, because it's like, let's just take all the care. This is what we do in this situation. You don't know this yet. This is what we do. It's
now get to it. Drink this brandy.
Now get to it and get back to normal, because I'm not putting up with this shit.
Right. I need a Princess Augusta, and I want to be someone's Princess Augusta. Like, for real. That moment is amazing.
Right.
You have been an admirable adversary thus far. Our battles bring me satisfaction. So this will not do. You are not allowed to come here and sob. You may not quit.
Lady Danbury has figured out a way in her elder years, if you want to call it that, I would call it middle age, but I'm not supposed to anymore, I guess. She has figured out ways of enjoying the process of doing what she wants and being the same what she wants and living her life. But there's something amazing about her journey back in time that Queen Charlotte affords us that helps contextualize it. And also this amazingly weird secret she has from Violet. I mean,
yeah.
we've all had weird stuff in our lives, and it's that incredible scene where you don't know what's going to happen. And I always start to get all sweaty because it's like, this is going to be so weird. And then Violet,
right?
Just, they both kind of go, okay, got it. Moving on.
Oh my goodness. So I feel like in the way a lot of what we see teaches us how to resolve conflict. This show taught us how to be friends in a weird way.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. Yes.
I will take off the weird way part. That's just me being insecure about saying that.
I think you're right. I think because it's so much about all these different friends. I mean, you look at King George and Reynolds, who've been friends since they were kids, and that Reynolds protects him like a brother. And what do you do when you know your friend is in need and you can't, you're not allowed to be his friend anymore? You know, it's Charlotte and Danbury navigating this world, and how can you actually be friends but also make sure that you survive in the world that you're in? And it's the older Violet and Danbury sorting their stuff out in this incredibly elegant and mature way. It's old Brimsley and Queen Charlotte. You know, it's so much of this is about when you invest in the garden that is a friendship, how do you make the flowers keep growing? Because they go through periods where they don't. And there's amazing moments where young Lady Danbury, and the moments where it's, is she compromising her friend by using her as a mouthpiece for the great experiment?
Oh.
She bargains with Augusta. She's very careful about it. She does the right thing, but she has a responsibility to all those people show up at her house and they say, what's she going to do about this? They're going to take our titles away. What's she going to do? Like, this is no good. And she figures out a way without compromising Queen Charlotte, but she figures out a way. And I think being pretty honest with Queen Charlotte, who's a little not conscious of a lot of this stuff throughout the whole thing. So I think it's so interesting the way Danbury has to drive the train, because Charlotte's catching up to speed. And Danbury's like, you know, Charlotte's in the train behind going, I don't understand what all the importance is. And every single time.
Right.
Because she doesn't understand her role in this from the beginning. How could she? She didn't have this situation when she was in Germany. There were none of these issues. She showed up at this place and she's living alone in a house with no husband, a weird dude who's following her around all day long. And she's like 12.
Right.
And you have this woman who's a little older than she is, but has lived the life of three women. She's had 400 children. She's been with a man that essentially was an arranged marriage. And there are two different points of their lives, but it's like two different eras just collide.
Right.
And what a lot of responsibility for Danbury. And what an incredible introduction to a consummate politician.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. I saw an old TED Talk that Arsima Thomas, who plays young Lady Danbury, did about 5 or 6 years ago. And she ended it with saying, strong women are made. And I'm like, oh, man, like, did she even know she was going to play that role? No, of course she didn't. But, man, Danbury was made.
She's made. But at every step of the way, she's conscious.
Yeah.
She's conscious, and it's like, I think with Charlotte's consciousness evolves in a different kind of way, which is what's also great about watching those two characters and as they become friends and as they become allies. But it's that amazing moment where, like, Queen Charlotte shows up at her house and goes, hi, guess what? I'm living here now. And she understands none of the implications of this. And somehow or another, Danbury has to be responsive to that and responsive to her friend, but also figure out a way to protect her friend, what she doesn't understand, but also protect herself. And that's really hard.
Is there anything about the Danbury Ball? Would you have known the Danbury Ball was going to be a key role in explaining the great experiment or
I knew that it had to be because it's such a huge plot point, but it's the first time Charlotte starts to understand her position. You know, it's the first time that when Danbury comes and explains, I mean, one of the funniest is, of course, when Danbury explains how to have sex. That's a different one. But
later on, Queen Charlotte had the nerve to tell her children, I drew you pictures. Like, girl.
And I'm like, guess who drew them first? Babe, just credit the author.
Right.
She probably pulled out the old pictures.
Right.
Just like, here you go.
Brimsley, grab those pictures.
Exactly. I think the Danbury Ball is this incredibly pivotal moment, because the only way that they'll be accepted in society is if a miracle happens. And the miracle is nobody can deny it if the king and the queen show up, right? And this is a question for you, actually. How conscious do you think Charlotte is when she asks George of how momentous this thing is?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. The first couple times I watched it, I said, oh, okay, Charlotte used her sexuality. She learned a little something, something, and she had some pillow talk. Then I started to think to myself, they had a conversation. They together decided and master planned that they would do this together. I do think Charlotte at that point knew what it was, and that George, young George, was on board.
I always look at Charlotte and go, like, what level of awareness does she have of the magnitude of it?
It's the moment she holds her stomach in front of the mirror for me, right before she goes to see George. And I love those little quick 5-second shots that, you know, after 17 times watching it, you're like, oh, that is like 5 hours worth of context right there. You know, she's thinking, no longer just thinking of herself. She's thinking of the legacy. And that's why I really love young Charlotte, too, because she's just 17. And that moment in the garden when she sees young George decompensating, like, she makes a choice in that moment. I think as privileged and maybe a little ignorant to her privilege that she is, she was really cognizant of what the assignment was. That's what I
think. She's cognizant of what the assignment is. But for me, what's interesting is she doesn't know what it means to be a leader and what that implies. Mm. And for me, what that is the oranges, because she has somebody. She says, I'm going to get an orange. And then a man comes over and gets the orange. You know, he gets the orange, gives her the orange. And she's like, okay. And then she says, from now on, I want to pick my own oranges. And everybody looks a bit aghast. And Brimsley sort of says, okay. And then the next time she's there, she's like, where did everybody go? It's like, will you let them go, ma'am? It's each of those moments, which are little building blocks that you, and that to me was, and I said, I think when I first read it, I just said, this is the most incredibly beautiful example of the effect one person has on thousands of people. So, and that each step of the way, I feel like there's this little, you know, it's like an aperture. And for her, the aperture just keeps opening and it keeps opening, it keeps opening in the middle of this. It's an aperture about England and society and this woman who got dumped in a place that she didn't know and she doesn't know and she doesn't understand the food and everybody dresses terribly and the whole nine yards. And there's that aperture. And then in the middle of it is George, who she thinks is one thing and turns out to be another, but it doesn't matter because as the aperture opens, she realizes this is who she is. It's literally, I would rather have half a man and half a king.
If what we have is half, then we shall make it the very best half. I love you. It is enough. I am your queen. And as long as I am so, I shall never leave your side. You are king. You will be king. Your children will rule. Together, we are whole.
I think she evolves so incredibly to that place. And then as the woman who literally goes in and refuses to let him torture himself anymore, which he's doing because he loves her and he doesn't want her to have to suffer.
Jeez.
And she gets her agency. She gets her power. Augusta looks at her in episode 6, I think, and says, and pretty much goes, it's all yours now.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, whoa.
This show is so good.
Right? That's what I mean. It's like you're just peeling the onion. You keep peeling
it's
the
so
onion.
Good.
You go, I didn't know there was another onion in the onion.
Right.
Like, that's the thing, you know, and not to state the obvious, but that's the thing about Shonda and Shonda's writing and the way Shonda's brain works and how she never loses sight of the fact that her characters and the worlds in which she immerses us are always current and relevant. It doesn't matter what the time period is. It doesn't matter what the context is, be it a hospital, be it Washington, be it Georgia and England. We're sitting and having this conversation because all of those things actively speak to us. And they're wearing beautiful costumes designed by the incredibly talented Lynn Paolow, and they're being directed beautifully by Tom Verica. But the reason we're having the conversation is because all of these things are still relevant right now. And you could change the time period, and you could be having exactly the same conversations about all of it. Because Great Experiment sure shit isn't over. She says, as a gigantic understatement. And, you know, what is your responsibility and duty as a leader versus your responsibility and duty as a mother or a wife or a husband or...
devout friend like Grimsley.
And, or devout friend like Grimsley and a man who gave up his entire personal life because of his love and duty for a queen.
If you watch Queen Charlotte, if you watch it, you will leave with a life lesson or two.
And I'll tell you something, and if you watch it again, you'll find even more. Because I think the funny thing about watching things and binging is it's great because what you absorb is the top layer. And deep people, smarter people than I probably get multiple layers. But if you keep going back and you keep watching it, and it can be, like you said, it can be a moment, it can be episodes, it can be, you see different things. And like I said, you said, what is the thing that I love most about my job or what am I good at? I love the fact that I can see so many points of view, and that it's one of the reasons I had to stop being an actor, because a director pulled me aside and said, you're not advocating for your character. And I said, but there's so many characters and they all have really good points, which is why I was a really shitty actor. But it makes me a really good producer and a good viewer, because there's something to everyone's point of view in this. And that allows you to look at the world, to me, with a sense of excitement and some generosity and curiosity and also impatience, which is, I think, where we should be.
You are amazing. We can't thank you enough for your time.
Oh,
and
no.
Insight.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for letting me take a trip to one of my favorite places in the world.
That's the cue, but don't go too far. We've got Jack Murphy, the choreographer, coming up right after this break.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. If tonight's movie night is just what you need, make it special with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm late.
very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
All right, everyone, to close out this episode, we are honored to have a true maestro of movement and artistry joining us. Jack Murphy, choreographer of Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Well, hello.
I've been trying to withhold all of my excitement and joy of getting to spend some time with you so that I can capture it for the recording. But I'm really happy to see you and to just hear what you've been up to. And just laugh with you. So how have you been?
Gabriella, it's so kind of you. Because, do you know, I had never done a podcast until you invited me to do one with you for Bridgerton Season 1. And it was an event for me.
Are you experiencing any full circle moments this time around or in the year since starting Bridgerton while working on Queen Charlotte? Because Queen Charlotte is so much about that looking back and looking forward and connecting dots. And
time comes out so much in the process now because of Bridgerton and the process of Bridgerton and the process of Bridgerton and time being in the early 19th century, but using a style from the 20th and 21st century to fuse the dancing to give it a modernity. And interesting that full circle, however you interpret that, I used the same kind of idea with Queen Charlotte, using the experience of playing with time. I went back to Baroque, but then jumped forward to ballet. So obviously using lots of fusion again, that's, as you know, one of my favorite words.
Yes. Yes.
But in terms of, you know, just this full circle, it's like, it's no project. I have no experience of anything like Bridgerton and now Queen Charlotte. So everything is of a time distortion.
I'm so curious about how you incorporated the costume and the flow of all those silhouettes in your choreography and like how you take that into your process as a creator.
I'm very particular because I think if you wear a costume, you're relying on it to do the work for you. You must become one with the costume and therefore it becomes your clothes because they were their clothes. They weren't their costumes. Yes, of course, deeply, you know, fine, you know, materials. But so I know what it is to live and to be and to move in those, in the cut, you know, the couture of those gowns and those fabrics. So the process, obviously, was drama school training with Jane and with Diana, taking that on to the dance floor with Diana, wearing it and knowing that it had to be part of me. So, but particularly on Queen Charlotte, there was an extraordinary process because actually I was invited by the costume team to go and teach them a dance that the actors would do so they would get a sense of what the actors were required. And this is the first time ever, ever, 5 years I was an actor, 30 years. And I had the most glorious afternoon teaching the costume department of Queen Charlotte a country dance, unbeknownst to them, that would appear in Queen Charlotte because I had just that week choreographed it. And it's a dance that takes place at the Danbury Ball.
Her Royal Highness, Princess Augusta.
Lord Danbury, Lady Danbury, I am honored.
Your Royal Highness.
The honor is ours.
The wonderful Danbury Ball. The very first ever Danbury Ball.
Right.
Yeah, we find out where the conception of the Danbury Ball.
Right.
So Lynn shared the designs of obviously the most extraordinary dress for the marriage, for the wedding. And I turned blue.
Wow.
So it was challenging, it was frightening, it was illuminating, it was completely and utterly, by the end of it, absolutely flying as one. And by the end, I was choreographing dances with trains that would normally have me getting on an airline, you know, going somewhere, because they're extraordinary. But then the team and I, we would talk regularly, and then we were on set for the Danbury. We were talking about the King's Ball.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a communication and a dialogue and a narrative that was so healthy and just bred confidence. Great.
Right. It seemed so. It was nonstop collaboration.
Because
those dresses, those gowns are huge. Those suits are so stately, so beautiful. The fabric, though, also looks heavier for the scenes.
Yeah.
When they're all younger, so.
And contrary to popular belief, I have never worn one of those dresses. I've certainly worn the coats, but, you know. But maybe I should try one day just to kind of, like, have a little more empathy with my fabulous actresses. So my process, as you know, starts with research, and its research starts with the script, and obviously it tells me. And so I start looking at my pictures.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Start looking at the shapes in my pictures that I have. Here we have, and I know it's a court ball because of the finesse, and I can see that they're on the rise. So I can see they have taken a plié ce soir and they're on the equilibrium. So the movement, even though it's just a picture, is telling me what dance is in. The gentleman has his left arm raised, and the lady with a very, very lovely poor bra on the left arm is going underneath his left arm. And mm-hmm. that shows me, and that tells me it's an Allemande. That tells me it's a German dance. And this picture was instrumental in me choosing the very first dance, of course, in collaboration with what Shonda had written. So that's where it starts.
How fitting that the clues hint that it's a German dance, and that was your inspiration for the wedding dance?
So I chose a dance that would suggest it had been taught in Europe, in Northern Europe, and Tom liked that idea. And then I chose a dance that I really felt it should be ceremonial, and I really felt it should be an act of duty. And because it was taking place in England, you know, we do love to put on a show in this country, don't we, with our royalty. I felt that it should be light. I didn't feel it should be romantic because of the nature of it being them only knowing each other six, seven hours. And it should be, once that started, and I know this is very bizarre, but I will tell you that many years ago when the Queen Mother died, my mother and I, we went to see her lying in state at the Palace of Westminster.
Mm.
And I can remember descending the stairs and seeing her coffin and seeing the four guards standing at the four corners of the coffin. And I have to say, when I was thinking of this stuff, I thought, oh, it'd be really nice to have four couples and have them in the middle. So, you know, in terms of imagination, never rule it out is what I say. Where there's death, there's life.
Always on it. Always on it.
I thought, you know, because... No, go with me. Stay with me, Gabby. Stay with me. I just thought, because actually, you know, we talk about Baroque being the splendid century from the mid-17th to the late 18th century. Well, they say the death of Baroque is with the death of Bach. But anyway, we know there was dancing a lot of minuets in the court of George III. That's for sure. Definitely. So I love this idea that it was very heightened. And the people, the four couples either side of them, it was nothing like Bridgerton. And here's the kernel of all the dancing in Queen Charlotte. The dances in Bridgerton, we dance to have pleasure. In Queen Charlotte, I'm afraid we go competitive and we dance to give pleasure. And we are professional dancers. So that then allowed me to kind of say, right, those four couples either side of Charlotte and George should be very good, very, very good indeed. And they should look professional. So that's where I drew the parallel from the standing, protecting. So they're not just dancing, but they're protecting the jewel of the crown.
I think that really just goes to show, though, how much thought is in every single detail. So there's a moment at the end of the Danbury ball where he is bowing to his queen. And it's the deepest, most reverent, most... I know. It is a moment. It is such an... And it just happens like off on... It's not like front and center the way it's framed. It's like off in its own little moment. It's just such a... I don't have the words for it right now. It's a beautiful moment. But tell me about that. Was that... Or
just... I love it how people think that I was anything to do with it, because it destroyed me on the day watching it on the monitor. you know, I was gone. I was completely gone, because that word, you know, and as you say, the bow, the reverence. He knows he's found his soulmate. So, but I think in that very moment, to quote, you know, to love another person is to see the face of God. And, you know, it's a very, whatever your proclivities are, okay, for him, and he is a man of God, it's a godly moment. It's a very, very spiritual. It's a very human. It's a very powerful, I mean, it is the greatest, the grandest emotion. And he's conscious of it. And he can be very expressive about it privately. And we, because of the brilliant filming of Tom, Jeff Jer, and Leo, amazing Leo, we get to share it. But it's so... the integrity of it and the realization of it and the placement of it, the artist that is Corey Milchrist, that's what whacks you, you know?
It's so incredible. You know, there's also, Tom was talking also about how you help the dancers understand what's at stake when it comes to the great experiment. Can you talk a little bit about how you did that?
Yeah, it's simple, because I'm gay and I've been in a room where I couldn't dance with who I wanted to dance with, and that people would rather I wasn't even in the room. So again,
speak,
I'm not going to say,
it.
You know, it's like I, for years and years and years, I was, you know, I was in my 30s before I came out, but I remember I was never able to dance with the person I wanted, you know, to dance with publicly. And also, I can remember being in a room and I would be dancing, and people didn't really want me in the room because they knew I was. So, I mean, I've experienced homophobia on a great scale.
Brimsley. That moment where Hugh Sachs is dancing by himself.
Oh, no, you can't. No, please don't mention this.
You did it to us. Why did you do that to us? You and Shonda Rhimes have messed with our emotions. What in the... Hugh Sachs is just looking off into the distance after he's doing, I don't know, what is that dance he's doing? And tell me about why you chose it, and just working with him in that solo moment. We get to see Brimsley. We get to spotlight Brimsley.
Well, first, you have to know, first and foremost, that I'm a huge fan of Hugh Sachs from Benidorm. Amber is proud of his work. So whenever I'm working with you, I keep thinking, none taken, none taken. I'm always like loving the, you know, that this man has entertained me over the years greatly. And not only that, he's a brilliant classical actor, a wonderful, wonderful classical actor. I mean, of course, that moment when the court are dancing on the beautiful floor and it's so fabulously lit. And there we go again, the division, the two men dancing at the top of the hill, filmed brilliantly by Jeff Gurr and, you know, and lovely Leo. And so obviously it's memory. He's thinking of the memory of when he danced with Reynolds himself, you know. And what Hugh did as part of his process, he came and watched me teach both the young lads, Sam and Freddie. He watched me. He didn't say anything. He just sat and watched. And he wanted to know their exact choreography so he could replicate.
Oh,
so that it was very organic. And I would dance. And then I would dance with Hugh. And then I would come away. I would come away from the hold. And so when he filmed that at 10 to 4 in the morning and we were wrapping at 4. So he did a marvelous job. But that was very painful. That was very, very painful for me to film because I was at the top of the hill with them and watching, of course, watching everyone dance beautifully down below. And of course, it's just the memory of it is just too raw for me. You know, it's kind of like, there I am back in that club with the windows blacked out. You know, it's like we can't join.
Full circle.
It's full circle.
The Danbury Ball is outstanding. I got to tell you, bravo. And then there's this moment where Charles Keir walks up to Arsima Thomas to take her hand and go onto the dance floor.
I've worked with on stage before in Sheffield on Shakespeare. We did The Winter's Tale together. So he understands my language. And so obviously that's one of the nuanced moments of like, I'd say, you're not going to dance with her. You're going to request, you're going to ask, for the pleasure and you're going to protect. And so we look at the action. And of course, he's a brilliant, brilliant, you know, award nominated actor. And so he's very, very interested in finding the very fine balance in the scene. And that's again, when you work with actors of that caliber, that's what they want to do. They don't want to do it as a gig. They want to work on their craft, as you say.
Right. I'm here. I don't have a call time. Why not spend the day watching the younger version of me do their thing so that I can have a magnificent performance? It's just outstanding.
That was Hugh's idea.
Wow. You mentioned before that you look for clues in Shonda's writing, especially the unspoken parts of the relationship between Charlotte and Brimsley. Can you tell us more about how your affinity for those characters fuels your decision-making in the series?
Well, those two characters, you know, in particular Brimsley,
mm-hmm.
he chooses duty. The reason he's dancing on his own, he chose his queen.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose in life was to serve his queen. And that, the stakes of that were greater than the stakes of him and Reynolds. So he didn't want to be in a drama, which is Energy Station 4. He wanted to serve the queen. And his role, he felt, in life was 5 paces behind.
7 states of energy is... This is something that you practice and coach dancers and actors on,
the
performers on.
Yeah. So 7 states of energy. Energy is really focus. Where's your focus? So 1 is sloth, 2 is over easy, 3 is economic, 4 is dramatic, 5 is operatic, 6 is heroic, and 7 is catatonic.
Wow.
And it's all to do with focus, and it's to do with spheres as well, and circles, and... Yeah, and energy in relation to changing focus and spheres. So if I'm your waiter in a restaurant and I fill your glass and I leave and you don't even know I've done it, then I've probably been a very good servant. So that's economic. It's known as economic. If I come to your table and I say, I hope you don't mind that, but I really love your hair. I'm now engaging. I'm now it's about you and me. It's not just about you. So my focus economic is on you. If I start then a conversation with you, it's now dramatic. If I was to then turn to the next table and say, don't you think her hair's really lovely? I've just made it operatic. So I've changed the focus. So if you like, if you think about the Royal Opera House, it becomes much wider. So, and of course, then you just have to think of heroic, and we see plenty of heroic behavior in Queen Charlotte. Plenty by Queen Charlotte.
Yes.
She's a heroine. She stands by him.
She sure does.
And it's not a duty to a position of power. You know, she's a heroine because she loves him. It's about him.
Jack Murphy.
Hello.
Thank you again.
No, thank you.
This was so wonderful. This was so fantastic. Thank you so much for your time and for all of the beauty.
And all my notes. Look,
all of your research.
All my notes by my computer.
There's so much. I'm also a fan of Post-its. We're cut from the same cloth. It's okay.
But don't forget that tea and that dance in London. Make it happen.
I will.
Fabulous.
Special thanks again to executive producer Betsy Beers for taking the time to leave some gems with us. And another thank you to choreographer Jack Murphy for treating us to an allemande through episode 3 of Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story. On our next episode, we're having some pear brandy with Princess Augusta herself. Well, we're talking about that scene and more with the revered actress Michelle Fairley. And the charming Corey Milcrease drops in for a heart-to-heart about King George.
George comes in, he's announced, and he comes in and he says, Lord and Lady Danbury, thank you for having me. It's not, you know, it's wonderful to be here. It's thank you for having me. I'm the fucking king. And I'm thanking you for welcoming me into your home that technically I own, but it's immediately going, I'm paying reverence. You're in charge.
Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is executive produced by Sandy Bailey, Lauren Homan, Alex Alche, Tyler Klang, and me, Gabrielle Collins. Our producer and editor is Tari Harrison. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your favorite shows. Get the book. I'm a crispy turn the page, smell the binding kind of queen, but you can download it. And you can find Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story on Netflix. We'll see you next week. Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota bZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new?
Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.